Welcome to Waves and Wonders, a podcast by the Central Coast State Parks Association, an environmental nonprofit in San Luis Obispo, California. Waves and Wonders focuses on natural and cultural topics as they relate to the Central Coast. I'm Gabby.
And I'm James.
And we're two Cal Poly students that love to explore the natural beauty in our own backyard. Our first episode is about whale watching with our guest, Michelle Roos, a biologist and educator with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, an organization dedicated to resource protection and ocean preservation.
Yeah, so.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you here. We're just wondering, to start off, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and sort of what got you into marine biology?
Sure. I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo. I'm a native. My dad taught at Cal Poly in the biology department for about 40 years. He was a vertebrate zoologist. So I grew up as a poly brat, went to preschool there at the little preschool at Cal Poly. So, and went up to school. We always had really interesting animals and pets. So it wasn't surprising that when I decided to go to college, I decided to be a biologist, just like my dad. And I went to UC Santa Cruz, a fabulous school, just really loved it, got my degree in biology there, and continued doing some work. I couldn't quite get a job without some experience. So one of my early volunteer experiences was working on a research vessel that left San Francisco and went out to the Farallon Islands. And I learned how to identify marine mammals that way. It was very exciting. I've also taken various jobs with some big month-long or couple month-long projects in the Eastern Tropical Pacific to study dolphins. But most of my research has been done on harbor seals, elephant seals, and sea otters. But of course, when you're studying the coastal environment that way, you're also looking at the whales, you're looking at the plankton, you're really paying attention to the entire ocean food web. So I continue to be passionate about ocean issues. And in my job working for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, I get to work with people who are conducting original research. Occasionally, I get to go out on an expedition with them. And I also teach part-time at Cal Poly in the bio department, just like my dad. I teach a class called Biodiversity of California and some other classes as needed. So I have a really exciting and diverse life. Very happy. Happy to be living here in San Luis Obispo County.
Yeah, that is so awesome. Yeah, really excited to be able to, you know, pick your brain with all your experiences.
Sure.
So just to slowly get into the topic of whale watching, we are just curious, when is the best time you can go out and see these whales on our central coast?
Yeah. Well, couple things. First of all, whales and large, animals, marine animals are traveling along the coastline all the time because we are on the edge of North America, the Pacific edge, and we're part of a great migration pathway for marine mammals and seabirds. So animals are traveling along our coast all the time, but there are some key seasons that where you're more likely to see different kinds of whales, different species of whales. And so it goes into understanding the life cycle of those different species. So the marine mammal of California, by the way, is the gray whale. So we should all know and be familiar with gray whale life cycles. The gray whales have their calves down in Baja California, along the peninsula there, and some shallow lagoons in December, usually right around the month of December. And so they stay down there, and then gradually throughout the winter and the spring, gray whales start traveling further north. They're heading up eventually to reach the really rich feeding grounds in Alaska and the northern parts of the United States, of North America. Some of the individuals leave earlier, but the cow-calf pairs, which are traveling close to shore, their peak time to cross this part of California is in March through May. So one of the best times for watching gray whales is March through May along the coastline, and most of them will be heading north. So you can kind of look for that. If you're looking at a cow-calf pair, you're going to see a blow that's a big blow, and then right behind it, you'll see a little blow, and that's the baby. So that's really the peak time. But then, of course, once they go up to Alaska and feed, they have to come back down to their breeding and calving grounds and be there by December again. So we have another migration that occurs about this time of year, September, October. They're traveling south. They're usually not quite as close to shore, but you can often see them. And then you're looking at those blows heading in the southern direction. So that's just the gray whales. Stop me if you want to keep talking about gray whales. Otherwise, we can talk about the humpbacks, which are happening and going off right now.
Yeah, both are great. Yeah.
Okay. This time of year, California waters kind of go through three major seasons. There's the stormy season that's going to be starting up again as the coastal winter storms start coming down to our area, and they're churning up the waters and breaking up the kelp forests. And then in the spring and early summer months, the days are getting longer and the kelp is growing. And as that kelp grows, it creates habitat for all kinds of other coastal organisms and migrating midwater fishes. And then in the late summer, here we are, August, sometimes starting in late July, all of August and early September, we start seeing what's called the oceanic season, where the seas calm down and the winds calm as well. The kelp forests are lush and rich and providing habitat and food for all the organisms from phytoplankton, the tiniest microplanktonic organisms, all the way up the food web to the sardines and the anchovies and the mackerel that are traveling along the coastline, taking advantage of the abundant food resources. So it's just a marvelous food web all the way up the chain as you get into humpbacks, lunge feeding. We saw some recently off of the coast of San Simeon Point, five whales lunge feeding right off, fairly close off the pier. And so this is a great time to be looking for blows, looking for what we call feeding frenzies. When there's a large bait ball in the water, a ball of bait-sized fish like sardines and anchovies, or even something a little bit larger, when the birds and the marine mammals start seeing them, they start aggregating and collecting that ball, kind of forcing that school to get more and more defensive and more enclosed. And then they start plunge diving. Whoa, there down goes those pelicans, and the harbor seals and the sea lions come in from the sides, and the whales come up from the bottom with their mouths wide open, taking massive quantities of water and fish, squeezing the water out of their baleen and sucking up the succulent morsels of fish. So keep an eye out for feeding frenzies. They're usually an indicator that there's a lot of food in the water, and you never know what you're going to see.
Sorry, I just had a quick little clarifying question. So when you're talking about the humpback whales, what do you mean by lunge feeding?
Oh, well, different animals, of course, have different feeding strategies. So in contrast, gray whales tend to be bottom feeders. They eat little amphipods, invertebrates that are on the sea floor. But humpbacks like to feed along at the surface. And so they will actually create a little bubble, a circle of bubbles around a school of fish, which confuses the fish and causes them to bunch together. And then they come out around, they get up a good head of steam, and they charge or lunge into that school of fish with their mouths wide open. And that's called lunge feeding. And it happens at the surface. And if you're really lucky, you get to see it.
Huh. That's incredible. Wow. So are there certain places that you'd be able to see something like lunge feeding or just a feeding frenzy? Like, or is it just kind of luck of the draw? Just you're looking at the ocean, you happen to see it? Or are there like certain hot spots along the central coast where you could hope to see?
Well, the hot spots vary with where the food is. So The entire central coast is a great place. But yeah, even more than hot spots of where you're going to see feeding animals is how you look, where you look from. So in order for you to get a good vantage, you want to be up high, maybe on a bluff or a cliff somewhere where you get a nice view of the ocean below you. Also, it's better, I find it's much better to look for whales in the morning when the seas are calm. Once the wind picks up and you get all those white caps, it gets pretty difficult to tell a blow from a whale versus a white cap. It's also a little bit challenging when we've got the pelicans around because the pelicans are plunge diving and they create a splash that tends to look quite a lot like a blow. But when the seas are calm, it's easier for you to distinguish those things. And then if you're just kind of out there scanning, and of course, the more you're outside, the more likely you are to see something like this. I always look about halfway to the horizon. So whenever I'm walking on a coastal trail, my eyes are always scanning about halfway out to the horizon, because that's the most likely place in that region where I'm going to see whales. You're not likely to see them super close to shore. And if they're too far out, you're just not going to be able to get a good look at them without binoculars or a telescope. So I kind of shoot for that midsection there. And then, of course, nowadays with social media, people will tell you, there's a feeding frenzy going on at San Simeon Cove. You know, everybody goes, and we actually can see an increase in visitation at those places. So that's another way if you're on some sort of whale watching internet site, you might get information that way. You can also always call the whale watching vendors around here in Morro Bay and Port San Luis. They will report the whales that they've seen in their recent whale watching trips. And that's a really good place to find out. This is the right time. We saw whales here yesterday. There's a good chance we're going to see them here today. That would be when you pony up to go on a whale watching tour.
Okay, definitely. Yeah, that's great information. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, I got really lucky this summer. I had a job at State Parks in Pismo Beach, and there are tons of whales there. It was really neat. Very neat to see.
Part of that's because you were out there, right?
Right, yeah.
You're not sitting in an office and then waiting for that key moment. The more you're out there, the more likely you are to see these things.
Yep. Alrighty. So other than gray whales and humpback whales, are there any other species that are visible to us on the Central Coast, or are those the two main species that are inhabited?
Yeah. You know, we've been very lucky, and I think that part of it has to do with the fact that we are in one of the largest marine protected areas in the continental United States, the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. We are very lucky to see a variety of other species of whales that aren't typically as common. The most exciting whale and the largest animal in the world is the blue whale. And we've been seeing blue whale sightings in the along the coast of the central coast of California within the Monterey Bay Sanctuary. We also regularly see orcas off of Monterey, the Monterey Submarine Canyon, which is a deep canyon that provides a lot of upwelling that supports fish species that those whales are going for. I personally haven't seen killer whales myself off of the coast of San Luis Obispo County, but I just talked to someone who described what he saw, and I thought, that sounds a lot like a killer whale, because they've got these huge, massive black triangular dorsal fins that stick up out of the water. And we clarified that it wasn't a shark. So that's possible. I've seen him when I've gone whale watching up in Monterey. So you never know. Then we have some smaller whales, the fin whales, the sei whales, the minke whales. These whales are here all the time, all year round. They're smaller. They are more subtle. They don't tend to breach the way the grays and the humpbacks do. But you never know. You never know when you might see one of them.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you have one like a certain species of whale, or maybe one like whale watching experience that stands out to you as your favorite along the Central Coast?
Wow. Well, it wasn't whales, but it was dolphins. And I was out whale watching out of Morro Bay. And as our boat was leaving Morro Bay Harbor, we were approached by a a super pod of common dolphins. It was amazing. There were thousands of dolphins, and they came over to the boat and they were bow riding. We could see their blowholes opening and closing from sitting on the platform on the boat. We could hear the exhalation that when they are surfacing. And they just stayed with us for a really long time. It was just a spectacular experience. I did that with the marine science class, marine mammals, seabirds, and reptiles last winter quarter 2021. It was really exciting. Everybody had a great time.
That's incredible. Wow. Are dolphins seasonal as well, or are they kind of more year-round?
Well, we do have some year-round species. For example, we have bottlenose dolphins that tend to kind of live in this coastal zone. Of course, they move around a little bit, but they're not migratory. We also will have harbor porpoises, very, very small porpoises that tend to be more residential rather than migratory. And then, of course, dolphins will go where the food is. And I don't know how they communicate all that, but they will move around quite a bit this time of year. Great time to see them because of all the food in the water. So be looking for, if you see a feeding frenzy, I'm just looking. What are the birds? What are the mammals? Are there any dolphins? Just not that long ago, a couple months ago, it would have been July. I was up at San Simeon Point and we looked right down there and there were bottlenose dolphins in the bay and they were actually herding small fish. I didn't know what species of fish they were into the shallows so that then they could eat them, snap them up more readily.
Wow. Incredible.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So intelligent. Yeah. I was wondering, how does like human recreational activity, like I was out surfing and like these dolphins just swim like right through the whole lineup of surfers. Like, does that negatively affect the dolphins, or they seem kind of like social creatures. Like, does us being out there, is that negative? Is that detrimental to their lifestyle, or is that sort of an okay thing?
Well, that's a really good question, and it's an ethical question, so I appreciate you asking it. Dolphins are social. They have very complex social structures, so your observation about that is, in fact, very correct. And then also, you know, surfers aren't the only 6-foot-long animals out there, so dolphins and other marine species do adapt to some human activities simply through avoidance. Like you mentioned, you're on the surface, the dolphins are underneath you. We hope that they're not really significantly altering their behavior to avoid the surfers in the lineup at Morro Rock. But there are other activities, human activities, that can be really destructive, potentially very damaging to especially the whales, the whale migration pathways. So we know these whales are using the coastal waters off the coast of California, the entire west coast of North America. So if there's any nets there, the potential for getting entangled in fishing nets or any other kinds of structures that are attached to the seafloor, maybe high frequency wires. People who are not being terribly observant, especially in the bays where the calving occurs, we see scars from ship strikes or boat strikes against whales. Sometimes they survive, sometimes not so much. And we also are becoming more and more aware of an emerging issue of underwater sound. So whales communicate underwater using sound. They have sound generating apparatus in their skulls. And for example, humpback whales can communicate hundreds of miles. You probably know that sound travels faster in water than in air, about 4.5 times faster. So if you generate a sound, it's whipping there through across the miles, talking to somebody else and letting them know, oh, this is where the food is, or looking for mates, or, you know, whatever it is that they're trying to communicate. But increasingly, human activities create sound that interfere with the ability for marine mammals to communicate. More ships, of course, very loud, can have decibel levels exceeding 80 decibels. Those can be not only damaging to the hearing of some animals, but it can also interfere with those communication sound impulses from one individual or group of individuals to another. So that's a really serious concern that that hasn't really been looked at as comprehensively in the past, but it's a great area for research. If you love sound and you love dolphins and whales, there's some great research programs out there right now that are looking at understanding underwater sound and its impacts. Very exciting field of study right now.
Yeah, that is so interesting, because you really don't ever hear much about sound pollution like that.
Right.
Yeah.
We have an exhibit. I run a little nature center up in San Simeon called the Coastal Discovery Center. And we're open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 11 to 5. We're in San Simeon State Park, Gabrielle. So, we just got an exhibit that was put together in part with MBARI, the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. They're the research arm of the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And they've collected sounds from whales and dolphins, marine mammals, as well as human-generated sounds, like the sounds of ships traveling. And they put that together in an exhibit. And it's a really fun exhibit because you push all these different buttons and you hear all these different sounds. One of the most amazing facts is that rain, the sound of rain hitting the surface of the ocean, can be heard below the surface about 2,700 meters.
Wow. So,
did you know? I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
The whales are swimming out there. They're going, oh, it's raining up there. Who knew that? Everybody knows when it's raining, no matter, pretty deep, more than a mile deep. So pretty exciting stuff.
Definitely. Well, on the topic of different challenges they face, how has climate change impacted whales migration or dolphins migration? And how might that affect their future, or does it impact their future?
Another great question. Thanks, Gabrielle, for asking that. The most significant things about climate change, or in this case, the warming of our oceans, which is very well documented, is there's some physical factors about water and oxygen. So for one thing, cold water holds oxygen better than warmer water. So if you're an animal that gets your oxygen from gills, from swimming around in the cold ocean waters, when that water warms, it releases its oxygen in a gaseous form more readily. And so there's less oxygen available for those individuals to breathe. So that's a serious concern right there. Another factor is this rise in carbon dioxide levels. When we think about carbon dioxide in the air, and we know that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas and is contributing to the warming. And many of the carbon dioxide sources that we're most concerned about are human caused right now. But the ocean is a great carbon absorber. It absorbs, by estimation, about 50% of the carbon that we have. So thank goodness the ocean is so large. It covers 70% of planet Earth. It's been sucking up carbon for a really long time. And so that's a good thing. We're really grateful for that. But on the other hand, when carbon dioxide mixes with water, it creates something called carbonic acid, which is a mild acid. And acid isn't good. You know, we want to keep a pH of about 7.0. Maybe in the ocean, we like it a little bit more alkali, pH of closer to 8, right around 8, 8.5. But acid lowers our pH. It makes the ocean more acidic. And when you think about our shellfish, who make their own shells out of calcium carbonate, carbonic acid can literally dissolve calcium carbonate. You can try that at home. All you have to do is take a shell you picked up at the beach and stick it in a Coke or any other carbonated beverage that has an acidity level that's considerably below pH 7, and you can watch that shell dissolve. And so there is some factual information out there that that's starting to happen in areas where acidity is more extreme than in, you know, some parts of the ocean. Everything changes and varies. When you get into shallow bays where the warming is increasing, you're losing some oxygen and you're getting a little bit more acidity, you're starting to see this compounding effect. And those compounding effects can impact the organisms that the whales feed on. And so food availability becomes more variable. It might not be where it used to be in their favorite feeding places because of changes in physical qualities of the ocean. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. As well, you know, whales are really big animals. And big animals thrive in colder conditions. It's a surface to volume ratio, the larger the surface to volume ratio. So these large animals may not be able to tolerate warmer conditions. It may just literally become too hot for them. So that's another factor to consider. Another factor is that as ocean levels rise, some of the beaches that marine mammals, now obviously whales don't give birth on beaches, but harbor seals do, elephant seals do, other kinds of marine mammals that, and even sea turtles that dig eggs into the sand, as sea level rises, it might be impacting where they can have their offspring. And that could impact overall population numbers over time. So those are all really genuine concerns.
Right, definitely.
So you want to go out and do some whale watching, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely.
So whale watching from land is something you can do any day. I've already told you, you know, some of these clues of ways to maximize your likelihood of being able to see something. But then a whole other level of excitement, really, really exciting, better than a ride at an entertainment park, is going whale watching on a boat. You can go on a really big boat. They've got some big ones that will hold, you know, hundreds of people, or you can go on small boats that only seat maybe 6 to 10 people. And getting out there on the water is the most exhilarating feeling. And here we are, we live on the coast. James, you've said you're a surfer, so you know how exciting it is just to be on the water. But getting on the water on a whale watching boat is so exciting. And then you never know what else you're going to see. You might see exotic seabirds on their migration pathways. You might see animals that, you know, maybe a mola mola, an ocean sunfish. You might see jellyfish. Sometimes we see sharks out there. So it's just, you know, in terms of the bang for the buck, I would go whale watching any day of the week just to see what I might find out there, even if I didn't get to see whales.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, is there anything else? I think probably good to wrap after this. I know you run the... I'm forgetting the name of it.
That's okay. I'll take it from here. You're going to
cut. Yeah, go ahead.
So a couple other things. When you're going whale watching, now whale watching vessels know what the rules are. You don't want to get any closer than about 100 yards or 300 feet from any whales. So what whale watching boats will do is that when they see whales in the water, they'll often tend to just kind of shut off their engines and float out there and see how close the whales come to them. The whales can come to them, but you can't go to the whales because, of course, that would be another form of harassment that could impact the survival. You know, the last thing anyone would ever want to do would cause a mother and a calf gray whale to become separated because of defensive movers to avoid a boat. So you want to be sure that you're taking a whale watching trip with a valid and approved whale watching organization. And most of the ones that you can see commercially advertising are that. They know the rules and they respect it. But then if you're also out there on your own boat, say you're out fishing on your boat and you see some whales come up, it's really tempting to get too close. And we've seen that occasionally when we've seen whales in Avila Bay. Everybody jumps on their paddleboards and goes out to get close to those whales. Humpback whales in particular are famous for breaching. Sometimes a whale will breach and will accidentally, you know, unintentionally land somewhere in a way that could either upset a kayak. And occasionally we see these stories about a whale actually landing on a kayak or a paddleboarder. I'm not sure how actually common that is, but there's a point where you're looking at an overcrowding situation. Mm-hmm. So you never want to overcrowd whales in a situation, and you want to just respect them at a distance. And that's part of the challenge that we in a society, we're used to getting up close and seeing everything, but we really want to be sure that we respect them from a distance. So that's another nice thing about whale watching from shore is you can use your binoculars and your telescope. I don't recommend whale watching with binoculars on a boat. That's a great way to get seasick.
Gotcha.
I bet. I get really bad seasickness, so
yeah,
not the best.
Yeah, but so places around here where you can learn more about the marine environment, there's the Central Coast Aquarium in Avila Beach. I love that place. They don't have any whales there, but there's all kinds of other organisms, touch tanks. It's a great place to go on a date or bring a family member. And then, of course, you can go eat at one of the great places. So that's a wonderful place to go. The Morro Bay Museum of Natural History in Morro Bay has spectacular bird viewing in the bay. The windows are just huge there. So you never know, while you're at the Morro Bay Museum, look for whales because you might see them outside the breakwater and the sand spit. And then up in San Simeon, we've got the Coastal Discovery Center at San Simeon Bay. So that's a neat place. We actually have an exhibit there on the history of whaling. In the late 1800s, whalers would shove off their boats from San Simeon Beach and go out to harpoon whales and drag them back to San Simeon Beach and flens out those whales, which, of course, we don't do that anymore. It's against the law for lots of good reasons. But we have bones of those whales that died back over 100 years ago. And so we've created an exhibit that talks about how whaling has changed from whaling to whale watching. And we still love and benefit from seeing this migration of animals that's probably been going on for hundreds of thousands, if maybe not even millions of years. So that's kind of a fun place to go. And then another place that's great for whale watching is the Piedras Blancas Lighthouse, which is just north of the elephant seal viewing site in northern San Luis Obispo County. It's a point of land and there's a lighthouse on it. You put lighthouses on points, but that means that when you're out there, you're closer to the migration pathways. So you often get some really good views of migrating whales. That's a great place to go. Not very expensive, $10 a person, and you really get an opportunity. That's where I would recommend you go March through May and get those cow-calf pairs. Really enjoy getting a chance to see them.
All right. Well, I think that's about all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Yes, it was a pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm really glad you guys are excited about whales and learning more about them and whale watching. And I appreciate you sharing this information with others.
On behalf of the Central Coast State Parks Association, I want to thank you all so much for listening. I'm James.
And I'm Gabby.
And this has been episode 1 of Waves and Wonders.